This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.
All right, well, it's good to see you all, and looking forward to just chatting here today and seeing what we can learn from each other. I have a few things that I've learned the hard way, and maybe some, you learned some things the easy way. Maybe one note about Allegheny Boys Camp. I am currently chairman, and the next chairman is sitting here, Doug Hoover, so it's good to have him here, and he's doing well at just taking some things over and moving forward in that way. All right, well, I don't know why exactly you have interest in the session, but we all have issues with relationships most times. And how do we have nonprofits and relationships that work? They don't always work just real well. And you don't have to be in a nonprofit long until there's a few relationship issues that start to pop up or you sense an uneasiness. And they have to do between the board, administrator, staff. It's all mixed in. So we'll take a look at how do we handle these things? How do we as leaders handle it when things come up? What can we do that can be done differently? And so some of the things is just going to be pretty basic today. I'd love to hear your feedback at the end, of course, and hear from you what can we learn together as a group. What's been your experience and what has worked well? How many of you are board members here today? Okay. And administrators? Okay. All right. So we'll be talking mostly about administrators, but I think this applies to for board members. I think one of the closest replicas of a nonprofit that we have in the business world would be a public company. I don't know if you ever thought about that or not. Public company has their initial public offering, shareholders buy in, and they buy stock, and they own part of the company. The books are audited, and they're public. The company is run by a CEO and managed by a board of directors, and so are our missions. And something that In looking at actually being a public company with a company my brothers and I have, we looked into it maybe a bit, it wasn't real seriously, but we looked into it and just sort of wondered if this would make sense for our company. And we soon had someone tell us, it's a nightmare. Don't try it. You just have to try to keep everyone happy. And so in nonprofits, I think we sometimes feel the pressure, whether we're on the board or administrators, even working at nonprofits. We have a lot of shareholders to keep happy, the board to keep happy, we have clients to keep happy, and then we have staff to keep happy. As I work with business leaders, administrators, when you sit down with them, try it sometime, and ask them, what is your biggest challenge? And then sit there for half an hour to an hour and listen. Their biggest challenge usually is not what their business is about, not what their nonprofit is about, but it's about people. And somehow we're Christians and we're all working together at nonprofits, but yet we have problems, people problems, and that can usually be our biggest headache. But it can be good too. And when you read Scripture, it starts in Genesis. God created Adam and Eve for a relationship. And immediately we see problems cropping up. So what we're experiencing today is very, very normal. We have problems, relationship problems. Every story in the Bible that you can think of, there's some relationship drama going on. Any book you read, you watch a movie, there is relationship issues. There are problems. As you look at the plot of it, it points to relationships, and God has created us as people to want relationship, and He has created us for it. So the Bible is full of these stories, and our lives are full of these stories. And so when we come to missions, People come to missions to serve, and they believe in what the mission is doing, right? They're excited about the purpose of the mission. They want to be part of this thing that's bigger than themselves. I'm the same way. But we tend to leave missions, not always, but we tend to leave missions because of relationship problems. The mission hasn't changed, but we've come to the end of our rope with people, and we're worn out. So I want to put a lot of pressure here on you as leaders to do something different. If it's going to change, it's going to be up to you. And how can the relationships in our mission really reflect the character of Christ? How can it be a place where people want to be at that is Christ-centered? So hopefully today you learned something that can be practical, applicable to your organization. A few of the books that I've read in the last year that I pulled some information from. What is the Call of the Chair? I was actually on a conference call with Gary Miller one day, and we were talking about boards, and he talked about this book, The Call of the Chair. So while he's talking, I'm Googling it and then bought a used one on Amazon. And then he goes and says, by the way, I'm going to buy y'all a book and send it. I said, whoops, I already bought mine. So really good book. Another one is The 5 Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace. That's a good read. Humble Leadership, Conversational Intelligence. Those two books are not necessarily written by Christians, but as we all know, business books that work have biblical principles behind them. There's this common breakdown that I've found that has happened in missions, and that common breakdown happens between the board and the people. Have any of you experienced that? See some heads nodding. The board's out there doing their thing. They have no idea what's going on in the field. They're calling the shots, and we here are stuck having to listen and work with them. So how do we deal with that? There's a few ways we could deal with that, and I'll share a little bit more at the end. But I think as a board, we really need to connect to our administrator. The key position on the board is the chairman. And so if you're the chairman, you're the face of the board. You don't really have any power or authority unless the board gives it to you.
Right.
And so you're the mouthpiece of the board, but yet you're leading. And it's a good thing you have a board, because alone we as chairman don't have what it takes usually just to run an organization like this. So this is for the board, but especially for the chairman in supporting our administrator. And there's three things that I believe are important when it comes to supporting our administrator. And one of those things is to model what we want to see in our mission. It's really up to the board to set the standard. So if the board is pretty lukewarm about things, how's it going to go for the administrator? So you're serving God by serving on the board, and you want to make sure that when it comes to policy making, you're consistent with the God-given mission that you're working with. And are you giving clarity to your administrator? Are you providing him with what he needs to know that he's actually doing his job? You're a board of directors, so legally you are held liable for what goes on in the organization. And woe is you if you work with children and do not have policy and procedures. And especially if something happens, your risk goes up and things need to be in place. That's not for your administrator to do. That is for your board to pull those things together and give direction as far as what actually goes on in the ministry. And if ever something happens, not only are you going to be asked why you're not holding your administrator responsible for his actions, but you're going to be asked, where is the paperwork to prove it? So you as a board set the tone for your mission, for your administrator. And mentor. It is up to you to nurture the development of the administrator through personal, professional, and spiritual relationship. And you as a board chairman, if you're a chairman, you have a special relationship with your administrator where you're connecting with him, he's talking with you. There needs to be a high level of trust between the board chair and administrator. And sometimes I wonder if this isn't where the real breakdown happens. Because you have administrators that really need someone to talk to. Sometimes they just cannot talk to anyone but the board chairman about what is going on in the ministry. They need someone to bounce things off of. And how often is there an administrator and a board chair where the administrator can just lay out his doubts and fears about what's going on and be really, really honest? And how many chairmen can share with their administrators the underground rumblings behind them at the board level and have that kind of relationship where there's complete trust with each other and they can work together in a very, very good way? And I know what that kind of relationship feels like. I feel like I would have that relationship with Brian Martin from Allegheny. It's a lot of fun. We just say it like it is, and we get down to business. But sometimes that's where the breakdown happens, and the administrator is not sure that he can trust the chairman, and vice versa. Of course, the chair and the administrator are both Christians, so they should see eye to eye and get along. But most times they're strong-willed people that have a background of success to some degree, and there's a good chance of butting heads. And I think when that happens, there's a time for the chairman to step up and say, let's go out back and let's just talk through this thing and get this figured out. That way we don't have to air it out in front of everyone else that would feel the organization might be falling apart if that happens in front of them. So mentor your administrator. That is the board's job. And also, I'll add, you're obligated to invest in your administrator. Everyone has room to go, to grow. Make sure he's taken care of emotionally, physically, financially. The last thing you want your administrator doing is being tied up with a lot of side hustles to support his habit there at the ministry, right? Because he just cannot make it financially. My board chairman's not sitting in the room today. No, that's fine. So give him economic freedom and also encourage him to grow personally. And a lot of times administrators tend to be visionary or entrepreneurial, and you need a board to come along and say, okay, let's get this thing running smoothly. Let's get things in place. Let's get policy and procedure there. And they need the checks and balances of their board. And then to monitor, how do you know that your mission is effective? How do you measure results? With business, we know what results are, right? They're financial. We measure them pretty closely every month. And the problem is that they're a month late. We would like them the day of. But how do you know in your mission if you're really being successful? Is the administrator doing his job? You don't want to micromanage him most times. You want to free him up to do his job. But how do you know and how does he know? And how do we know it, when we're in the business of saving souls, that we're actually getting our job done, when the results may come in 10, 20 years down the road sometimes? It's hard. It's hard. But what are daily activities that you can check up on with your administrator? If you can hold him accountable and give him some parameters, he'll know he's doing his job and feel better about it. Especially for you as board chairmen, stick with your administrator. Be a person that he can just call up at any time of the day and talk to. Sometimes the only time is at 6 a.m. in the morning, and you see someone to talk to and talk through things, or someone to hear you out and give you some feedback. And sometimes in missions, believe it or not, the administrator is part of the problem, right? And there's relationship issues, and the administrator is on one side and staff on the other. And how's the administrator supposed to solve that one? And that's where I think the board needs to immediately get involved and work out differences that come up. So a lot of times, board meetings, we sit there and we measure the health of the organization by the income versus expenses and say, this is working. But is there another way that we can effectively know what's going on in our missions and know if we're being successful or not? Martin Luther, in an address, one of his speeches said, in the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends. And so as a board, you should be in verbal support of your administrator. He should know he's doing well, or if he's not doing well. And then connect your board to the people. For you as administrators, what can you do to get your board connected with the people? When you're doing overseas missions, that's really hard. It's tough because no one's going to be buying plane tickets every month when you have a board meeting and flying over there to have it and sitting down with them for a meal. One thing that I have found works fairly well is invite the board to the ministry. If they're going to get together and talk about the ministry, come to the ministry, see the people, sit down with them, eat a meal with them, and then talk afterward. And I've just found it just makes a huge difference, not only for the board to personally know your people, but for your people to personally know the board and to, you know, see that these are actually normal people. They're not crazy people that pull decisions out of a hat. No, they actually are normal people, and we need to help them understand the ministry so they can make good decisions. All right, let's talk a little bit about administrators. How can administrators do well in leading and unifying our team? And I'm going to get fairly basic here, but I feel like we as administrators sometimes lose it at the basic level. So first of all, I have three things to focus on here with relationships, and one is connect. A lot of our problems and missions are focused around relationships. And so you as an administrator need to lead in those things and those issues. So how can you connect? Of course, we read in the Bible that we can figure out pretty soon that in the Bible, God intended us to have a really, really deep relationship with each other, really, really deep, with some people. Relationship with God and with other people. If we don't have other people, that'd be pretty nice some days because we wouldn't have problems. But how would you even live out Christianity? Because in the Bible, it talks about how we relate with other people. That's how we live out our Christian life and how we relate with God. So it is about relationship. So without meaningful relationships, we might exist, but we'll never prosper. So when you look at the corporate world and the business world, the attitude there is hands off. You don't get into the personal stuff. It's messy. You don't want to touch it. And besides, how do you deal with the emotional stuff? How do you deal with the intangibles? And what do we as Christians do with that? What do you do in your businesses? And what do you do in your nonprofits? Can you keep your hands off people's personal lives and make it work? Probably not. I don't think so. Not and do well. Well, we're in missions, we're in the people business. And when you're in the people business, your personal problems come out, right? Mine did when I went to missions. My personal problems still come out. Some of my staff are here. They know that. You know, your personal things come out because you're working with staff. You're working with your clients who are people for the most part. And there's just a lot going on. And so as administrators, What do we do with this whole relationship thing? How deep do we go? How do we deal with really connecting with our people? John Maxwell talks about being an influencer, and he said, to be an influencer, you have to love people before you try to lead them, because leadership is influence. And the moment that people know you care for and about them, the way they feel about you changes. We like to get things dumbed down to physical, tangible things, but really we're dealing with feelings when we're dealing with relationships and how people feel about us, how we feel about them. If you can develop a relationship, they will be more willing to listen to your ideas and follow your leadership. And this is true whether you're dealing with those in your staff team or those you're ministering to. So to become a person of influence as an administrator, you do need to have a relationship with your people. And if you think about it, you always respond quicker to someone that you know, even if they're your enemy. You ever think about that? Because there's relationship there, even if it's a bad one. If you have a personal relationship with someone, they will give you more grace in times of disagreement than if they don't know you. So goodwill is earned, and the way to earn it is by developing personal relationship. There is a study done. It's called the Grant Study at the Harvard University. They studied 724 men for 72 years, and this study is still going on today. This is the longest study out there by far, they say. 60 of these men are still alive today, and now they're studying their descendants, 2,000 descendants. And they track the life stages of these men from college sophomores to the present. The men took physical exams, psychological tests, questionnaires, personal interviews. It was every 2 years they sat down with these men and went through the process. They studied almost everything possible, and what they wanted to do was figure out what the secret was to good life. And the wives, eventually these men got married and had wives, and on down the road they started thinking, you know, maybe we should start doing this with the wives too. And so they asked the wives what they think, and they said, well, it's about time you asked it so we could be studied. So for 42 years, the psychiatrist George Valiant directed the study and published several books on its data. And in March of 2008, there was a newsletter where he came out and said what they found so far. And this was his response, and this is secular, by the way. He said, the only thing that really matters in life is your relationship to other people. Good relationships keep us happier and healthier, and we live longer. Social connections and committed relationships are good for us, and loneliness kills. Well, quite literally, people don't live as long if they're lonely. At any given time, one in five Americans report that they are lonely. And the quality of close relationships is what matters. They say that the most satisfied people, most satisfied their relationships in their 50s were most physically and mentally healthy in their 80s. So that's what they learned in their study. Isn't that pretty biblical?
Yeah.
Very biblical. And the study continues on. So I want to ask you, how deep are the connections with your team? How what kind of relationship do you actually have with your people? Is it pretty surfacey? Is it pretty deep? And a relationship is a set of, if you really think about it, it's a set of mutual expectations you have about each other's future behavior that is based on past behavior. You know people because of the way they act, and you know what to expect. So Joanna, I can't quite read her mind yet, but I can pretty much tell what she's going to do next or what her response is going to be or when there's an issue, right? She doesn't have to say anything. None of the rest of you would pick it up, but I would pick it up because we know each other so well. So I would say we have a pretty good relationship. You would agree, right? So we're pretty comfortable, and we understand each other, and we're used to each other, and so that's how a relationship works. If you meet a person for 2 minutes, you can't tell much in 2 minutes. But once you work with them for 6 months, you know them pretty well at that point. And that's what we call trust. We trust, we know how other people are going to act. We trust them enough to know what it is expected. And there's a growing acceptance in our culture that the workplace is moving beyond the interaction that used to be there. Whereas you came here, you work for me, I pay you, and you go home, and we just don't talk. Okay? There's a growing... Things are beginning to change a little bit. What used to be referred to as TMI is now maybe acceptable if we're really going to build a good team. And I think some of that has to do with the barriers or the... maybe some of the walls coming down with IT where you have all this information. To be competitive, you're almost forced to work well with your people and build good teams. And if you can't do that, you're going to lose out. I wish things had got more competitive a long time ago, but I think things are changing in that realm in some areas. You see, the companies that are winning are the ones that build a good culture. So we're talking about some culture change. And I think this affects missions too. People less and less are rewarding arrogance. They're punishing arrogance. They're not putting up with it. And they're rewarding humility in the workplace. And there's a couple levels of relationship, but I'll just skip over this. This is something that was talked about in one of the books. And the first level, they said, is -1. So this isn't even a level. But in this level, people are not treated as individuals. This is like slavery. People feel coerced, manipulated, and forced. And hopefully you don't feel that way about your job. People stay in these situations only when they have no choice. And an example of this is in North Korea, in the prisoner of war camps. Every once in a while, the guards would take the prisoners out and take them on a raft and down the river just to get some fresh air, a little change of scenery. And the prisoners would use this opportunity to harass their guards. And what they would do is one would fall off accidentally off one side of the raft, and the guards are jumping in, trying to fish them out, trying to get them back on the raft. Meanwhile, another one would accidentally fall off on the other side. And they had the most innocent faces on, and this was all put on just to harass the people that were holding them in prison. And doesn't this happen sometimes in businesses? It's pretty bad when it gets to that point. But if you harass your manager because you have no way out, and you find ways to just make his life hard, that would, I think, be a definition of that. That's called a -1 level. And I personally believe that this is why labor unions started back in the day. And it was a way to gang up and somehow control the outcome of your employment because it was controlled by very few people at the top. And then there's a level 1 relationship. That's basically I meet you at the store and we chat, we say hi, and there's really nothing personal going on. This is the interaction you get when you go to your Department of Transportation, get your license changed out. We sort of hate it, we put up with it, but we're not looking for a relationship. The second relationship is a relationship that acknowledges the whole person, level 2. And we enjoy functioning at level 2 with family and friends, but we very few times will do it at work because we don't think it's safe or it's rewarding. But what if you would open up to people at work and have a personal relationship and have fun and enjoy your time? Not that you need to share all your family secrets, but there's a deeper level of trust and openness. You honor the other person. You care for the other person. And you sort of agree not to undermine each other to get to the top, right? You work together as a team and do well. And then level 3 would be mutual relationships. More emotionally intimate relationships. And I think depending what organization you're with, it's more of a complex, controversial, maybe at least clearly defined relationship. Maybe there's personal boundaries, biblical boundaries, cultural boundaries that come into play. So different countries would react to this differently. But this is the relationship where you really are really good friends with the people you work with. You know everything about them, not everything, but almost. Mm-hmm. You really do care about each other, and some of your best friends are at work. And I think on the for-profit side, this is our opportunity as Christians to have church at work, where we really care for our people well. And I think in missions, why would we not do this in missions too? Be open to doing that. Of course, it's mutual. Some people don't want to go there. It's not forced, but it's a level that really brings a team together. It's almost the kind of relationship where you can, you know what the other person's thinking. You can finish their sentences, and it's a really close relationship. So I think we all have the capacity to live and work at level 2 or level 3, and I think the effectiveness is up to you as a leader. What kind of relationships do you have with people in your organization? And then mentor. In missions, we are blessed with young people who have a heart for the Lord and want to serve others. So they give their time, maybe a year or two of their life without pay, and it's a real blessing. And if they're like me, when I went to missions, they bring their past with them. You know what that's like, right? We've all worked with young people. We work with middle-aged people. We work with older people. They bring themselves with them to the job. And then we try to work with people, and our personal stuff comes out. So what do we do with that? You as an administrator, you're busy connecting with your donors. You're running the organization. You're making decisions, doing paperwork. You're just trying to keep your head above water. But are you connecting with your people? How's that really going for you? Do you really have their hearts? The young people coming into our missions, they're watching you as an administrator. They're wondering if they can trust you. They wonder if you have what it takes to help them through some of the tough things in life. And they're wondering if they should approach you or you should approach them. And so our missions, we focus on helping people, but what about helping our staff? So working with people, working with our clients is stressful, and it brings out the best in us and the worst in us, doesn't it? It really brings this stuff up. So how do we support our young people? How can we be there for them and help them through some of the questions about what they've been through in life? And usually when we start digging, the barrel is deeper than it appears. And life is messy, isn't it? So why not embrace it with the attitude of, we're going to get through this together, and your success is my success. Because people are our most valuable asset in our missions and our relationship with them. And then there's times when we have a young person that just has a hard time functioning. So many relational problems. And I'm sure as an administrator, you've had some of those young people come. So what do? Do you send them home? Do you work with them? Some of you are just grinning. You could tell stories, right? What do you do with your young people that come that are struggling? More often than not, they're not struggling on purpose. Very rarely are they struggling on purpose. They're struggling because of things that have happened in their life. And I believe it's up to you as an administrator or to have someone on your team that is going to dig in with them and help them move forward. Help them find their way. They really want to find their way. They want to do well at work. But how do we deal with the things in the background? They want to share about the dysfunctional home they grew up in, the abuse they suffered through, the losses and disappointments that haunt them. And they need someone to care for them, walk alongside them, and believe in them. When I went to Bald Eagle Boys Camp, there were some things in my life I was trying to make sense out of, and I was trying to minister at the same time. You know how that probably went. And Laverne Beachy was my supervisor, and he, once a week, we would meet, and we would talk, and we would talk through things, and we would sort things out. Made a huge difference and impact in my life. We would really love to see staff come to our missions in good shape, right? Perfect, ready to roll, no issues. We could focus on what we feel God has called us to do. But what if God has called you to care for your people personally? And you set the tone in your ministry. You start caring for your people will start caring for each other. All right, and then appreciate. I could say a lot on this. There's books written on this kind of stuff. There's 5 love languages of appreciation if you did not know it. One is words of affirmation, quality time, acts of service, tangible gifts, and physical touch. So we appreciate our people, right? And we tell our people we appreciate them. But what if we're missing it? A Gallup report says almost 70% of the people in the U.S. say they receive no praise or recognition in the workplace. And what's going to happen after this talk is the folks here from Camp Andrews and Meadows of Hope are going to have a chat with me about what I just said. No, it's okay. You may say anything you want. If I'm missing it, you tell me. So I'm saying what I should be doing if I'm not. So do you appreciate your people, and how do you express it to them? I'm going to guess that you appreciate your express your appreciation to your people in the way you want to be appreciated. Mm-hmm. Is it their love language, their appreciation language? Probably not. You'll get it right maybe once out of five times. So we communicate in ways that are most meaningful to us. And so people come to our mission and they have a sense of calling, and they're really dedicated people and they're working hard. They're sacrificing. You have no idea what goes on sometimes. Sometimes you hear about it later, but they really have sacrificed. How do you express that appreciation? Because after all, they're not working for much pay at all usually. So the real question is not, do you appreciate your workers? Do you appreciate your staff? The real question is, do they feel appreciated? If your way of expressing appreciation would work for everyone, I'm sure everyone in your ministry would be a happy camper, right? But do you know your people well enough to appreciate them the way they want to be appreciated? All right, I need to keep moving here. Building trust. Make your ministry a safe place. If people are going to thrive there, you got to make your ministry a safe place. If it's not safe, they are going to clam up and they are going to go home clammed up. And Carter Cass, in the book The Right and Wrong Stuff, he looked at thousands of 360 feedbacks, and the top 10% of performers at the sea level leadership in companies, he got the top three from them. And the top one was they're good at building relationships with others. They seek to understand before being understood. They're good at listening, good at creating trust by understanding the other's point of view. So make your ministry a safe place, and I'm going to get real basic with this. So there's two parts of our brain that we respond from. And so I work at a residential girls' home, and so we get this training. But the one part of the brain is the amygdala, and this is the part of the brain that's responsible for the flight, fight, freeze, or appease responses. So if you're working out of that part of your brain, you will do one of those, and it's probably going to be irrational. The other part of the brain is the prefrontal cortex, where if you feel safe, you're going to live out of that. And that's where you can socialize. That's where you can work on complex things, personality expressing, decision-making, good social behaviors. They all come out of that. And I'll just sum this up really quick. When you as an administrator walk in the door, your people have a sense of what's going on before you open your mouth, right? They sort of know where you're at. They know how your day is going. And when you open your mouth, maybe even before you open your mouth, they will either be responding to you out of their amygdala or their prefrontal cortex. So how safe is your ministry? How do you relate with your ministry? And I just encourage you as administrators to listen. Andy Stanley says, leaders who do not listen will eventually be surrounded by people who have nothing to say. So conflict well. When I was young and I knew a lot, I thought it'd be fun to go to be a chief at Baldigo Boys Camp, and it was a little bit more fun than I was bargaining for. And I learned one lesson the hard way. There was a Wednesday morning in the fall of 2000, my co-chief and I, we were having a good time with our boys. Everything was going fine. In fact, we thought our boys had just, we thought we were in heaven. Our boys were just doing great. Nothing was going wrong. And eventually there were a few things popping up, but we were just enjoying the peace for once. We were having a good day. And that went on until about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and all of a sudden everything broke loose. And we had more problems than boys. For the next 12 hours, we were out in the woods trying to solve problems. And I learned a lesson that day that problems don't just go away. They stick around, they get bigger. And if you don't take care of them when they're small, they will keep going and they will blow up. So what if when we engage in conflict, instead of stating conclusions, not asking questions, and assuming the other person is the problem, what if all we do is share information and ask questions? What if we believe them best than others? What if we truly love our neighbors ourselves and live life like Jesus did and ask us to? And what if we go ahead and deal with conflict? Cheryl Richards, in a quote from her, she says, if you avoid the conflict to keep the peace, you start a war within yourself. And that war goes on and on. So as leaders, we need to conflict well and set the example. Encourage understanding. You've all had the two coworkers that just have a hard time getting along, it looks like, but they have a hard time probably understanding each other. And as a leader, you need to get it worked out somehow. Bring them together, maybe have a few meetings with them, help them begin to understand the other person, understand what's going on, believe the best in the other person. You never want their relationship to get so raw that someone has to leave the ministry because of it. Most times, problems are because of misunderstanding. So lead your people and lead with clarity. Do your people know what is expected? We're pretty good at putting together job descriptions. We're pretty good at getting this stuff down on paper. But what about relationships? And at Silver Springs Ministries, we have the blessing and opportunity and complexity of having two ministries in one. So we have Camp Andrews and we have Meadows of Hope. Those two ministries are different. They have two different missions, two different, it's just two different ministries, even though we work with children in both ministries. So what we came up with is a culture statement. Most of us work at either one or the other. Some work in both, but some staff from both ministries live together, some of the single staff. And that could always bring up a lot of conflict. And so what we did is we came up with a culture statement. And this isn't just because of staff interaction, but this is what do we expect of each other? This is not something I came up with. This is something I had some input, but the staff worked hard at coming up with this. So this talks about the leadership. I'm not going to read this off for you because you can read. But this is what, at Silver Springs Ministries, we expect out of the leaders behaviorally. We're addressing behavior here. We're addressing how we relate with each other. At a staff level, we have three points here. And this is what, as a staff team, we expect out of each other. And then what we expect out of ourselves. So these are just some things that we put down. We want to get them up and displayed on the wall. It's something we were working on this past winter. And we just wrapped it up a month or so ago. So we're talking about our culture. Talking about our behavior. Talking about relationship. And then the last point is to lead with decisiveness. As administrators, we have all kinds of decisions to make all day long. Right? Everything happens at once some days. And what about asking more questions? What about empowering your staff? What about just setting some expectations out there? They know what's expected and they can make decisions within that framework. However, there are times when we as leaders need to make decisions and care well for our staff. And it's been said that the risk of a wrong decision is preferable to the terror of indecision. In fact, I've seen staff that have just been plain down angry because their leader can't make a call. And they have to sit there and wait. No one else can make the call. Sometimes we're driving down the road, and there's these little furry creatures with bushy tails. They're ripping around. And as you close in on them, they can't make up their mind, right? It seems like they have ADD and drank two cups of coffee that morning. And they're just all over the place. About the time they turn around, they've changed their mind already. So I want to encourage you as leaders to be decisive, right or wrong, make a decision. The road of life is paved with flat squirrels who couldn't. And all in all, at the end of the day, we make mistakes, right? We all make mistakes. And yet God can use those mistakes. I could tell you a story. I'm out of time. I'll just share this verse yet. 2 Corinthians 12:9. And he said unto me, my grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities that the power of Christ may rest on me. So as we work with relationships, there's plenty of times we're going to mess up, but know that God can even use those times for his good and for his honor. I want to hear from you yet, if we have a minute or two. Any thoughts, comments, questions? I might not have an answer, though.
In the first part, you mentioned about the chairman and the administrator. Does it have to be the chairman?
To work with the administrator?
Yes. Or can it be a designated other board member?
I've seen it also work with a designated board member. Sometimes there's those understandings, but I think the chairman needs to be in conversation with him. Mm-hmm. Yep. Anything else? We are down to 1 minute.
Any thoughts about conflict? You said conflict, well, problems don't just go away. So how does that actually look when you conflict well?
Well, when we conflict, we tend to feel threatened, right? And so if I'm having a conflict with you, I'm fighting myself because I feel like either running away, yelling, or something, because it doesn't feel safe when someone confronts us because we take it personal. I have found for myself, and I still have a ways to go with this, but believing the best about the other person, their intentions. Most people have good intentions, and they're coming to you with a question and a concern. And to be honest, and I've found even with working with staff, if I'm pretty sure there's a big problem and I just ask questions, sometimes I find out there's not a big problem. And there was no reason for the meeting in the first place, but at least now I know.
Well, if conflict is around ideas, that's healthy. Mm-hmm. If conflict becomes personal, then it's a different level and it has to be handled more carefully.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that...
You can come on up, Jeff.
I think we want to just encourage conflict around ideas in this, that's a healthy discussion.
Mm-hmm. Emotions get involved in relationship, right? It's pretty hard to keep them out. Thank you.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.